Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure. Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Clauso, joined as always by Peter Flaherty. What's going on, Peter?
Not much. We are through what was, it feels like, an all-out blitz of regional weekend, at least from both my end and also your end, just in the sheer amount of work we had. I joke with Jacob, but I've become very well acquainted with the corner part of the sectional on my couch between all the draft stuff and the regional stuff. I've spent many a night there, but I wouldn't have it any other way. So it'll be another fun weekend ahead with supers.
Yeah, crashing on the couch because you're working all the time definitely feels like a bit of a young man's game. I can't say that I've had many nights on the couch, but it has been a lot of long days and nights. It's funny too. You always start with saying not much is going on, but it's anything but at this point. It feels like everyone is kind of going 100% at BA with the draft, where we're nearing like a month away from the draft, which is really exciting. We're recording this pod before Super Regionals, which is really exciting. I know on my end, I'm kind of like numb in the brain because all I'm basically doing is updating and writing a ton of draft reports to make sure we've got everything finalized ahead of the draft, and like working through this draft preview magazine, which we're kind of like right in the midst of getting that together. So there's about a billion things going on, but as we always say here, it's nice to be calling baseball watching and baseball writing work. So it's still a lot of fun, but Peter, you know what has been a lot of fun is NCAA tournament this year, and kind of looking ahead to Super Regionals, I can't imagine it's going to get any less exciting, although maybe we can cross our fingers and hope for a little less unnecessary off-field drama. That would be nice.
Yeah, amen to that. I don't think we'll have any games get pushed back this time, so I'll leave it at that. But that was quite the sequence down there in Conway. So I think that'll be avoided this weekend.
Yeah, and I just kind of wanted to briefly talk about how absolutely loaded these Super Regionals are just from a draft perspective. And as we were like getting ready for this pod, I was just going through our list of draft rankings and filtering out all the teams who are still involved, just to get a sense of like how much draft capital there actually is in the Super. So it's 16 teams. And this is kind of the crux of my argument for why I actually am like personally a fan of the transfer portal in this new era of college baseball. We currently have 28 players of our top 100 are going to be playing in Super Regionals, or I should say are on the teams in the Supers, because there are some players who are injured who actually aren't going to be playing. But in terms of like our draft board, 28% of the top 100 is made up of these 16 teams. Like they're on these teams in supers. There are 17 of the top 50. So that's 34% of our top 50 prospects will be uniformed in the supers. And then 12 of the top 30. So a full 40% of the players that we currently have lined up to be like first round talents. If you want to expand it to the entirety of the BA 500, what is just your guess for like the total number of players in the BA 500 on these teams, either in,
ooh, man. 'Cause
I was pretty shocked actually. Like I expected it to be a decent amount, but I was surprised with the actual volume.
I'm going to say 57.
That's a good guess. The actual number is 70 players, all or right. 14% of the entirety of the BA 500 are on these teams. And like, just to go a little bit further specifically of the 28 players who we have in the top 100, how many of those players do you think transferred to the schools they're currently playing on?
Just in the top 100?
Just in the top 100, yeah.
That's another really good question. I'm going to say 17.
Okay, that's also a good guess. 14 of the 28. So exactly half of the players on each of these teams transferred. Those names are Ivar Arquette at Oregon State, Liam Doyle at Tennessee, Vahiva Aloy at Arkansas, Gavin Keelan, who would have been in the Supers regardless, but he's still transferred, so he counts here. Andrew Fisher at Tennessee, multiple. Did I say Andrew Fisher already? No, I said Liam Doyle. Both of them transferred multiple times. Zach Root at Arkansas, Anthony Ianson at LSU, Daniel Dickinson at LSU, Ken Kepley at North Carolina, Charles Davalon at Arkansas, Marcus Phillips, and you could put an asterisk by him if you want, because under the old system, he was a JUCO kid. It's not like the JUCO to D1 move is unique to this era, but I'm still counting it here. If you don't want to count it, that's fine. You can make it 13 in your own head. Landon Beidelschies at Arkansas, Cam Leiter at Florida State, and then Max Williams also at Florida State.
You can also throw in Nate Snead, who started at Wichita, and then Alex Lovely, who started at North Florida.
Okay, boom. So there are two that I missed. So you are actually even better 16. With your guess, 16.
There we go.
So I'm glad I've got a reliable co-host here to call me on my errors. But I just think that, again, I'm a very biased perspective here. I don't have any dogs in the fight. I don't have any particularly strong opinion on the competitive landscape from like a major power conference coach's perspective versus a mid-major. But I cover the draft and I like to see the top players playing the best teams. And I like the fact that we can see even more really good prospects in college baseball's crown jewel event. I think that's awesome. The fact that we have just so much talent here, I think, is what we want to see. I mean, there's going to be positives you can draw from really whatever system that we have. But in my opinion, does like, I don't know, increasing the frequency of a Cinderella run by a team of scrappy players who the majority of the roster is not going to be playing baseball after they graduate. I think I'd rather just see all the best players, Peter. Is there anything crazy in that comment? And like, what are your thoughts on just the volume and quality? Because I mean, we've got four of our players in the top 10 are still in the field.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think you're super far off, at least from a prospect status standpoint, when you're talking about.
See, this is why I want your opinion here too, because you have thoughts on the draft side and you have thoughts on the college side. So do those two war in your mind at all?
It's a good question. So it's hard to not kind of pull for the Cinderella run, whether it be UTSA or Murray State. Murray State, obviously, to a greater degree than UTSA, but
yeah,
you know, certainly it'd be fun to see, you know, all those Texas guys competing in a super regional setting in Austin or.
Well, I guess you're kind of making the argument even better for me, because we get all the prospect capital I'm talking about and we still have two teams who you can root for if you want that Cinderella run. It's not like all of the non-SEC ACC schools got boxed out this year. The SEC kind of fell on its face a little bit.
Yeah, it did. But I will say, even if it's just one team a year, it's always fun to kind of have a Cinderella team to pull for deep down. Not that I or anyone at Baseball America is rooting for a team, but it is fun to see like Murray State 2 wins from Omaha or UTSA 2 wins from Omaha. And even just last weekend, they both clinched their first ever regional title. So it is fun to watch. And then I also will say, to your point, like it is a pretty stacked group prospect wise in Supers this weekend. There are a ton of big time dudes still left playing. I think a ton of eyes, and rightfully so, are going to be on the Fayetteville Super Regional with Tennessee and Arkansas going at it. And then also out west with Oregon State and Florida State, both from obviously a 2025 perspective, you know, because those are the guys you're scouting now. And, you know, we got the draft in a little over a month. It's crunch time. But also from an underclass standpoint, you got guys like AJ Gracia still playing, Jason DeCaro still playing, Gabe Gackle, Rock Chalowski, Dax Whitney, a whole lot of dudes. So there is just talent still everywhere in this tournament field.
Yeah, if I had to pick just one, like I can only watch one series, unfortunately this is just a completely artificial limitation that no one has to be held by, I think the Fayetteville Regional is the one that I would be all over. I mean, just filtering out those teams, we have 12 prospects in our top 100 who play for either Tennessee or Arkansas, which is just a ludicrous amount of talent distributed to just those two teams. If I expand it a little bit further out to do top 500, it's 17 total players. So that is the, like, if you're listening to this podcast and maybe you're not a college baseball fan somehow after consistently hearing us talk about these college players, like you want to tune in this weekend, like this is the Super Regional series to watch. You're going to see so much pitching talent. You're going to see so many talented hitters. You're going to see guys, a number of players who are going to go in the first round. You're going to see like basically a quarter of the second round between these two teams. I've mentioned him a ton recently, but Gage Wood for Arkansas going up against this Tennessee lineup. This is not my like number one pitcher hitter matchup, but like pitcher versus a specific team, seeing how he's going to attack guys like Gavin Keelan and Dean Curley and Andrew Fisher. Like Tennessee has a really impressive lineup, and it's not just talented players from a bunch of different classes. It's like a concentrated amount of guys who were really bearing down on this year. So I'm thrilled for that specifically. I mean, Zach Root maybe bearing the lead a little bit, because Zach Root has been ranked really highly and has been great the whole year. But I mean, especially after Gage Wood's performance against Creighton last week, when he struck out, 13 batters in 6 innings and got 13 whiffs on his fastball, and the curveball was looking really good. I think he's done kind of exactly what I was hoping and thinking he might be able to do. So I'm excited to greedily watch more of him.
Yeah, I'm with you. That one is the regional I'm most excited for. And then arms wise, just seeing how he performs and adjusts against Tennessee. He got hit around a little bit in his start against Tennessee in mid-May. I think in 3 innings, he gave up 7 hits, 2 runs, also punched 7 tickets. So nothing, you know, great or horrible one way or the other, but kind of right in the middle. So I'm curious to see how he does there. And he's got a chance to build off of last weekend and continue to make himself a lot of money, because, you know, as we've touched on and, you know, we'll continue to touch on, that's a really deep and talented Tennessee lineup, top to bottom, kind of navigating the middle of the order with, you know, Keelan Fisher, Dean Curley, and then the rest of the supplemental pieces they've got in there. And then also, you know, I think all eyes will be on Liam Doyle. He actually got hit around a lot in Fayetteville when they last played. I think he got tagged for like 11 hits, got bit by the home run a little bit. They were getting to his fastball up in the zone. Just putting good swings together and stacking quality at bats. So I'm curious to see how he adjusts, and that's going to be, you know, outside of Omaha, the Fayetteville Super Regional at Baumwalker Stadium, that's kind of as bright as those lights on the college stage can get. So like, obviously those are the two main dudes.
And I was telling Ben this on Future Projection. We recorded a little bit earlier in the week. He was kind of asking me about, we briefly touched on it, and I had said this one, and you're more locked in on like the college, the actual horse race instead of just the horses. But this one also seems like it's probably the most competitive just from a pure competition standpoint, because like if you just seeded all the super regional teams based on like likelihood to win it all, I mean, my four teams would probably be in no particular order: LSU, North Carolina, Arkansas, and Tennessee. Would you have a different group of four, or are those the four? So those two matching up in supers just feels like the most, maybe the most intense.
Yeah, that's the most intense and most compelling for me. And then
is it also the only conference on conference? I guess we have Miami, Louisville. That's ACC.
Yeah, Miami and Louisville. But for me, I wouldn't be shocked at all to see whoever comes out of that Fayetteville regional, and it's going to be battered and bruised, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if the winner of that goes on to win the whole thing.
Right.
You know, this feels like a College World Series type of matchup, and we're getting it a week before, but that's going to be a huge one. And then I've also got, you know, I'll be dialed in on Oregon State and Florida State. I think that's going to be a really, really competitive one. And obviously the LSU 1-2 punch of Kate Anderson and Anthony Ianson, both of whom looked really good last weekend, as they have for the better part of 2025/all of 2025. You know, Kate Anderson for me is SP number one in the draft at this point. But
yeah, we've had all of our top three college left-handers are still in the field here. We've had really loud performances from Kate Anderson. We've had a really loud performance from Liam Doyle, a kind of like short rest relief appearance from Liam Doyle that was obviously electric in just terms of like the environment of that game. I'm not sure if you have any strong thoughts on like the usage there. And then Jamie Arnold still being around. Like, do you think one of these players has maybe taken the reins and pushed himself further up the board? I think just given the chatter that I'm hearing from the industry, like there's a lot of buzz about your guy, Kate Anderson.
I was going to say, for me, it's been Kate Anderson. You know, Jamie Arnold threw the ball really, really well in the regional. But man, Kate was just flat out dominant against a really good Dallas Baptist lineup. 7 shutout, 11 Ks, only allowed 4 hits. I mean, he had every pitch in his deep arsenal working. I think he bumped a 96 on the final pitch of the game, which was pitch number, if I recall correctly, 106.
Yeah. Which is impressive for Cade, because I feel like if you are comparing and contrasting all the top college arms, kind of the one area where he falls a bit shorter is just like power to the fastball. I mean, he's still sitting 93, which for a college left-hander, I think is perfectly respectable fastball velocity. But that's like the one area where if you're comparing him to Liam Doyle, he's got more power. Jamie Arnold, maybe a tick more power, not significantly more. Kyson, significantly more power. Tyler Bremner, more power. Riley Quick, more power. So like, holding 96 deep is really solid for him.
Yeah, it was super impressive. Both breaking balls really flashed the trademark for him. Well, I don't know how much you could call it the trademark now, given the development of his slider, but the breaking ball,
yeah,
big in shape, tons of sharpness to it, got whiffs with it, feel for it was there. The slider was impressive. The changeup really flashed. Like, it's a legitimate 4-pitch mix. And I mean, if you catch him on the right day at the yard, you could leave with, not to get too crazy bullish on it, but potentially 3 sixes on your scouting card, or, you know, your notepad, whatever it is that you, you know, you scout with. Like, it's, there's a whole lot of like, this is what it looks like. And I think with the cherry on top is he's not a one trick pony, like a scout, or I mean, excuse me, like a stuff merchant, if that makes sense. Like, it's not just stuff only and he doesn't know how to pitch. Like,
right,
he knows how to pitch. He'll locate all four of his pitches for strikes to all four quadrants of the zone. And another like additional cherry on top is he's a super thin kid. Like, and as he continues to get stronger and fill out more, I think you can dream on a little bit more oomph coming just across the board to an already impressive arsenal. So, I mean, just in terms of how many buckets he fits in, I he's my SP1 without a doubt. But what Liam Doyle did was electric in every sense of the word, especially coming back on whatever it was, 2-3 days rest and going 2 1/3 perfect innings and just absolutely shoving it against a solid Wake lineup. And, you know, he kind of has that like Chase Burns, like, killer mindset, like psychopath,
very animated mindset. Very crazy. Yeah, if you like a psycho pitcher on the mound, he's one to watch.
Yeah, he's he, I mean this in the most complimentary way, like he is an absolute nut job. But
which if we, I don't know if we've mentioned this, but like just thinking about Kate Anderson, and I'm also about to talk about Jamie Arnold, like the like just disposition that Arnold and Anderson have on the mound compared to Liam Doyle is a huge contrast as well. Maybe considering like a theme of contrasting pitching styles, like contrasting personalities on the mound, like both Jamie Arnold and Kate Anderson are very poised and calm, and it looks like their blood is just running ice cold, like no heartbeat at all on the mound. They're very reserved just in terms of like how they're going to express themselves after they get out of an inning. It's always like a pretty casual walk back to the mound. There might be some times where they've gotten really riled up, but at least the majority of the time I'm watching them both, I just know how calm they are. And Liam Doyle, absolutely not the case. And yeah. I don't think one is better than the other or anything, but it's just funny to think about them in that lens.
Yeah. They're super level headed between the ears. Like you said, way more kind of, you know, zen and under control, and, you know, they'll let it out when they need to in select spots. But the sequence in the eighth with, I think Wade called an offensive timeout just to, you know, try and get anything, anything going against him, try and get him out of his groove and flow state a little bit. And it did the exact opposite. You know, I can't repeat what he said, you know, while he was
can't repeat a lot of what we've
mound,
seen last week but, or so.
Yeah. He was like, you know, you're screwed. He didn't say you're screwed, but
I also appreciate it too, because like when you get these offensive timeouts as like a former infielder, whenever those timeouts happen, it's very normal just to run into the mound, have like a little team meeting, like hype each other up, like just BS while you're waiting to roll. And I think his infielders were coming in and he was very aggressively like, no, like get the F back. Like we're ready to roll. Like he's like, none of this. And he's just clearly ready to attack as soon as he stepped in the box, which is fun because I think college baseball has just been really good drama this year.
There's been a whole lot, especially this past weekend with all that happened. But yeah, and then he goes out and he dots 98 on the inside part of the plate, and like Coach Vitello had to like go out basically and get him and coax him back to the dugout, and he like sprinted in all fired up, like went back to like the clubhouse area and just like kind of recentered himself. But yeah, he's a really, really fun one to watch, and the competitive juices will be flowing this week. And I'm at, like, just from I think what would really impress me with Doyle is one, if he obviously throwing the ball well, but, and this would also mean what I'm getting to, but, you know, seeing how he's able to adjust, start to start against Arkansas, like he'll be back in Baumwalker, back in Fayetteville. That's where he got touched up pretty good a few weeks ago. I'm curious to see, you know, if he's, you know, the pliability with him and adjustability, because I think that would be really, really positive to see. You know, we talk about with hitters, obviously at bat to at bat, but start to start, it's kind of somewhat rare where you're getting the same team in the same setting within 3 weeks of each other. So I'll be looking for that. And then on the hitting side, the position player side, I think like there aren't as many. Not that there are like storylines, but I think it's just, you know, like how
I'll give you one
continue to handle premium pitching. Like
I'll give you one really quickly and then you can get into maybe hitters specifically. But I think the best hitter pitcher matchup of supers is Jamie Arnold with Florida State against Ivar Arquette at Oregon State. I mean, you said Kate is your SP1 on the college side. I think there are, or just in general, but I think a lot of people would agree with you there. I do think Jamie Arnold still has a case for that. And the fact that you're getting arguably the top college hitter or the top college pitcher in the class versus maybe a little bit more of a solid case as the top college hitter and Ivar Arquette matching up against each other. That's just like a no-brainer, obvious highlight matchup. See how that one's going to work, who's going to come out on top. That'll be fun. And it's not like Oregon State is like Ivar Arquette and then no one else. You got guys like Gavin Turley, were really impressive on the college side. Trent Caraway's got tools. So
to Trent's credit, not to cut you off, like,
yeah,
I mean, he's hitting the ball the best he has all season at the perfect time. I think he's homered in 5 straight games, won regional MVP. Like, you know, he was, you know, it was real tough for a while, but for him to pick it up, good for him. I still don't really know where I'm at with him just in the grand scheme of things. I'm not sure how much he's going to be able to hit, but you know, he's certainly helping himself out here. So I'm with you. Seeing Oregon State's, I looked up their left-right splits because they're going to see three lefty starters this weekend. I think they only hit 255 this year against left-handed pitchers and, and 310 against righties. So
wow.
And these are three really good lefties they'll see with Jamie Arnold and Wes Mendez, who's a prime 26 guy, and Joey Vellini, who's made a name for himself this spring. So they've got their work cut out for him. But like you said, with sort of these pitchers jockeying for position at the top, you know, Ivar Kett with a really good weekend, regardless of what Oregon State does. If he continues to swing the bat well and do it against some really high-end premium arms, like, you know, that's a guy who's firmly in the top five discussion now, but it, you know, becomes a question of, you know, how high could he go? And
right,
you know, if he continues to swing the bat well and spearheads this run to Omaha, you know, he'll be in a really, really good spot.
Yeah, I would assume that Iva's still kind of in the mix for 1-1 at the very top end. So if he has some really loud appearances and again, guys that we think are some of the most premium arms that you could possibly face in the country this year, that's only going to boost his stock. I mean, it is kind of cool. We don't typically have as tight like positional battles and just like jockeying for position on the draft board this late into the year at the highest levels. So the fact that we've kind of got a lot of these guys still alive and even matching up against each other, I think is just really cool to see. So I'm excited for it. Any other hitters maybe that you want to point to that you're either excited about or you think they could move the needle a little bit? Again, it's harder for hitters to, and in the same way that pitchers can, but there's still plenty of hitters to like. I mean, our top ranked guys in supers, Arquette, who we've been talking about, Bahiva Aloy at Arkansas, Gavin Keelan at Tennessee, Alex Lodice at Florida State, Andrew Fisher at Tennessee. All those guys, really good chance to go in the first round. Dean Curley at Tennessee, Charles Davalon at Arkansas, or any other guys further down the board that you're intrigued by.
So the guy that I've kind of had, you know, everyone's had him circled for, you know, even just heading into this year, he's by no means a sleeper, but the guy for me who's just been on a steady ascent all cycle is Ike Irish from the, you know, Auburn backstop slash outfielder. You know, he's hitting 362 this year with 12 doubles, career high 18 home runs. Like, you know, positionally there are questions. He's got a plus arm, but you know, the catching needs some refining and, you know, the arm plays in the outfield, but it's like, you know, where's he going to end up long term? That's kind of the murkiness in the profile, but it's a really, really enticing hit power combo. Like, he's chasing at a sub 20% clip. He's consistently on the barrel. He can drive the baseball to all fields. And he's got an impressive track record of doing it, not only, you know, this year and in years past, but he had a great summer on the Cape last year. I'm kind of curious to see how far up the board he can play himself. You know, you really have to like the offensive profile.
Yep.
But you know, I certainly do. So,
I mean, you could make a pretty easy case for me that Ike Irish is just the best college hitter in the class. I mean, a big draw of Ivar Arquette's profile is that he is extremely athletic and he has lots of tools. He's got power. He's got a lot of room for error defensively as a shortstop who could maybe still move to third and be a good defender. And if he can't do that, has played second base at a high level. Where with Irish, like you said, if you don't think he's a catcher, he's a lot more limited in terms of where he's going to play for you defensively, probably a corner outfield spot, maybe even eventually first base and sort of this Tyler Soderstrom mold. But if you look at his collegiate track record, even going back to his days as a high school hitter, he's kind of always been a bat first catcher with a lot of power. I think even for me, like knowing him as a high school hitter and seeing the quality of his pure hitting ability in college, like how much contact he's made, the approach, he's never really had a ton of strikeouts. I don't think he's ever had a 20% strikeout season in a single year. And you can correct me if that's wrong, Peter, but like, left-handed bat with juice, with an on-base floor, conference competition. He was one of the best SEC hitters. So yeah, I think you're spot on. It wouldn't shock me at all if he went inside the first 10 picks. And really in the draft, it doesn't take much for like him to go a little bit higher and Iva to go lower. Like if he's the first college hitter selected, would I be stunned? Not really. I mean, remember Heston Kerstad going second overall in the Spencer Torkelson, Austin Martin draft. Like we had him I think we had Kerstad ranked in a similar range on the board then where we have Ike Irvish now, and there's no Spencer Torkelson in this class. So if teams really just like want a college bat and feel this is the guy, I think even if you don't view him as a catcher, he still could go really high.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, the power with him is plus, and you know, you could argue, I think, a strong 50, borderline 55 on the hit tool. I don't think he's a plus hit tool guy, but you know, that's not a huge knock on the profile, but it's a comfy 50, closer to a 55 than it is a 50. It's six juice. He's got a six arm. And you know, makeup wise, I can't, you know, really speak to it because I don't know the kid, but you know, if he's a kind of a classic baseball rat grinder type, I think you can feel really good about that in terms of trying to develop his defense behind the plate, or at the very least get the most out of it, because you know there are some interesting traits to work with.
And I think he is a good athlete too. I don't think he's this like lumbering catcher who can't really move at all. So like,
well, and he runs. He's a sneaky little runner. He's not, again, not a burner, not an impact guy with the legs, but I mean he'll swipe a handful of bases.
Yeah. It's also funny too that we have all three of our top college catchers still in play and alive and playing. Luke Stevenson in North Carolina, Caden Bodine at Coastal Carolina. Again, like just given the profiles they have, I would assume all these guys are going to be first round picks in some capacity. I know there are some people who are a little lower on Bodine just because there's questions about how much impact does he have. But I think the counter is that, look, he might have some of the best pure bat to ball skills in the college class. He might be the best pure receiver in the college class. Like someone has got to feel pretty good about like just the safety of that profile. Luke Stevenson, same sort of deal. Like maybe some skepticism about the pure hit tool, like the average that he has this year isn't super sexy. At the same time, it's a left-handed hitting catcher who feels pretty comfortable to stick the position long term. He's got good arm strength, and he also has really strong on base skills and raw power. So it just feels like with both these guys, even if we've got them a little bit further behind Irish, like they're both more likely to be catchers in the long run. I would expect these guys are definitely going to be drafted as catchers, whereas I wouldn't feel as quite as confident that Irish is selected as a catcher. And it feels like just fun guys to watch and kind of see how you're really viewing them.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, Stevenson and Bodine are no doubt slam dunk catchers. Stevenson plus defender through and through. Like even he's a better defender than Bodine, who's advanced in his own right back there. But just watching him, you know, not only this weekend, but throughout his entire college career, talking about Stevenson, it's really, really impressive. He receives the ball really well, consistently works below the baseball, steals strikes. He's a leader back there who knows how to handle and command a pitching staff and a high level one at that, which is a rare trait. And then just the catchability and catch and throw ability is really, really impressive. He's got quick hands. All of his actions back there are super tight and compact with his footwork direction. It's a plus arm. It's an accurate one. It's, you know, he's a pro defender back there. And Bodine is, you know, the receiving is the calling card with him. The hands are super, super soft. Again, steals a ton of strikes. You know, the receiving with him is plus. The arm lags behind Stevenson, but to his credit, it's accurate, which makes up a little bit.
Yeah, and he gets rid of it quickly too.
Yeah, the catch and throw skills are there with him, and like you said, the transfers are consistently quick. It's accurate, so it helps mask a little bit of the inefficiency with the lack of a legit plus arm like a Stevenson, but. For me, both Stevenson and Bodine are slam dunk first round picks. Even Bodine, who I think is probably the most underrated of the three. I mean, it's one of the most advanced college hit tools out there. Like I feel supremely comfortable sticking a six on it. Like for me, he's a guy I'd without a doubt take in the first round. I don't think, you know, I don't know how much impact he'll be able to get to professionally, but you know, give me the catcher with a six hit tool and at least a 55 you can stick on the defense. I think that package overall is kind of rare nowadays. So
if you're in charge of the pick and you're at 20 and you've got Luke Stevenson and Caden Bodine are the top two players on your board, Peter, and you got to break the tie. Which one are you taking?
Oh man, Lowe's good hypothetical. It was a very good hypothetical. Oh,
I think I'm going Stevenson just because I have more confidence that there's going to be some impact there.
Yeah.
And I don't feel confident enough that Bodine is such a superlative receiver that like the defensive value will be all too different. when I watch Luke Stevenson hit, I just think he's got a really polished approach. And so even if like I think you're going to have to live with some swing and miss, maybe some end zone contact questions that you wouldn't love to see, like his ability to spit on pitches right off the zone is impressive to me. The fact that I feel really confident about him tapping into power in game. I maybe would say like there's less risk with Caden Bodine, but I think there's a little bit more upside to be found with Stevenson. And so I'd probably lean that direction.
Yeah, I mean, with Stevenson, like you said, he'll hit for probably a lot more impact and power than Bodine. That's not a secret. For me, it's above average power to the pull side with Luke, and you know, the defense is the defense. So, you know, it's a, as with everything, it's a little bit of a give and take. You know, call me old fashioned, but you know, for me, it is really, really close. And I guess just for the sake of making it a little bit interesting to listen to, I'll go with Bodine, and I'll hang my hat on the plus hit tool and the above average defender. I just, it's a really appealing package and skill set for me. Obviously the defense and the thump is not that of Stevenson. But you know, I feel a lot more confident in his ability to consistently move the baseball, and consistently hit throughout professional baseball. Like I think he'll, you know, he'll do that for his entire professional career. He showed it at Coastal. He showed it on the Cape at a high level. He showed it at USA. Like all he's done is hit everywhere. And I don't see it stopping. And then again, you throw in the above average defensive package. And you know, the intangibles are really good. The makeup is really good. It's a guy that I'm a real fan of, but it is an interesting hypothetical, and I'm very curious to see how it shakes out on draft night, because I'm sure unless we're way off, no matter who you talk to, you'll probably get a different answer if you talk to, you know, 20 or 25 scouting directors or all 30. There, you'd probably get a decent, you know, mixed bag. But I think what we both can agree on is that Irish is the number one guy at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, unless you're just going to say you're not viewing him as a catcher at all until he's not in the convo, but yeah, I would say.
Even if you don't view him as a catcher, I think if you, you know, the offensive profile alone is enough, you know, to
agreed
for me to be sold on Irish. Like, that's a legit hit power combo, and that's another guy with a serious track record, and he's done it everywhere, so I really, really like him.
Cool. Well, what else you got to say about Supers, Peter? Anything else you want to add? I know the last few podcast episodes have been a little briefer than is typical, or at least they feel like it. But it always feels a bit self-indulgent to take too long here when we've got a billion things going on. So apologies for that if you guys really like the lengthy podcast.
Well, we'll have another one pre-Omaha next week, next Thursday, before I jet out. And then we'll probably overcompensate in the aftermath with some, you know, lengthier, more in-depth episodes as we get closer to the draft. So water will kind of find its level. But in terms of a super regional, like, you know, there's just a lot of money to be made for some of these guys. I think, you know, we hit on it across the board. Another kind of wild card arm that I'm looking forward to watching is Jacob Morrison at Coastal Carolina. He's been excellent all spring, steady up arrow, big 6'8 kid. With some stuff to boot, plus strike thrower, starter, no doubt. You know, he's going to have a really, really good Auburn lineup to deal with on the road. That's going to be the biggest stage he's pitched on probably to this point in his career. So I look forward to watching him. And then, you know, we've got the one of the premier 26s left with AJ Gracia, Duke hosting Murray State. So, you know, there's talent in all three of the classes, 25, 26, and 27, and then at the team level. So it'll be a fun weekend. I'm sure as we're sitting here, you know, next week on the 12th, we'll be reflecting on a handful of the guys that we talked about who, you know, propelled their team to a College World Series appearance.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
And selfishly, hopefully, there are a lot of dudes in Omaha, because seeing them, you know, up close and personal would be a real treat.
Yeah, that's what I'm rooting for your sake, Peter. All the best draft prospects getting to Omaha so you can see them in person. Cool. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today. Definitely check out the site throughout the weekend if you want all sorts of coverage on what's happening. I know Peter is grinding to just give you detail and context into all these matchups. Jacob's got a ton of content on the site. They both have previewed supers. I think you guys made picks too for each super regional. So if you want to know who picked who between Jacob and Peter, and keep score and then judge them after one of them wins, have fun doing that. But thank you guys for hanging out. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting BA. As always, we really do appreciate it. For Peter, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.